Good afternoon. This time we'll call the meeting, this meeting of the House Resources Committee to order. It is 1:11 p.m. on Friday, March 2nd, 2012. Let the record reflect the following members are present: Representative Gardner, Representative Foster, Representative Dick, Co-Chair Seaton, and myself, Co-Chair Feige. Purpose of our meeting today is to hear House Bill 340, Petersville Recreational Mining Area Land, by Representative Mark Newman, and to continue our board confirmation hearings. So, House Bill 340, Representative Mark Newman and his staff, Rex. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and feels good to be back in the Resource Committee room. A little different on this side, but the staff still working here hard for you like they did for us. Thank you. My name is Representative Mark Newman. I represent House District 15, the beautiful Susitna River Valley.
And don't be thinking you're going to hijack our staff up to finance you.
They're good people that make us all look good.
That's right.
Mr. Chair and members, what happened is in 1995 under the Hickel administration, a constituent of mine, Michelle Stevens, who contacted me this year with this issue, this is kind of a fix-it bill. She had about 220 acres of federal mining claims on federal land. The state wanted that land transitioned over into the state hands so that they could, the state wanted that from the federal government. The state asked her to lift her mining claims off of that so that the state could get that convenience of federal land over into state land. She said was glad to do that and help the state. She'd worked with Miles Tilson, or Jules Tilson, who was the director of Land, Mining, and Water at the time. Harry Noel was commissioner of DNR. Hickel was the governor. So she lifted her mining claims off these federal lands so it could get paid over to state lands. The state accepted those lands and committed to her to convey the mining claims back to her. But our statutes don't allow that to happen. And she's been working with this off and on since then. This is a time-sensitive issue, again. And what we do in the bill here is I have worked with Ed Fogles for quite some time on this. We've had quite a few meetings together with Ms. Stevens and his staff on what we can do to fix this. And so we worked with the Alaska Mining Association on this also to make sure that we get this conveyed back, these rights back to Ms. Stevens. And that's about where we're at right now. The language that we have in this bill allows the state to go back and fix this mistake that was done back in prior years. And I could probably try and get a lot more technical than that, but that's a straight shot on it.
Any questions for Representative Newman? Representative Gardner.
Thank you. Not to question the veracity in any way, but just in terms of making the argument, does she have documentation of this agreement that the state was going to give it back to her and then couldn't?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, yes, she has multiple documents that talk about this. She also has letters in your packet from Jules Tileston, again, who was the director of Land, Mining, Water, and Marty Rutherford, who worked over at DNR at the time, that it was the intent of DNR to transmit these back here, but because just the way our statute was written, there was a technicality that needs to be fixed in that, but and I have talked personally with Mr. Tileston on this issue about his desire to try and make Ms. Stevens whole again.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I don't have those documents. Do other committee members have them? Thank you.
Reproduce. Partner, to your question, you're making copies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the sponsor's original. I'm just kind of looking through it quickly. It's very interesting.
And let the record reflect we've been joined by Representative Kawasaki. Representative Kawasaki, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The term recreational mining claim is not something I'm familiar with. Can sponsor explain what a recreational mining area is?
Mr. Chair, we have Ed Fogles here, who's an expert on mining claims and issues like that. He's probably more appropriate to answer those questions.
Okay, Mr. Fogles.
Members of the committee, Mr. Chair, my name is Ed Fogles. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Natural Resources. And the recreational mining area is a legislative designation by which you set aside land for the specific purpose of creating an area that's for people to go and recreate and mine on. A normal mining claim, if you stake it, it's not designed to be for recreational or tourism purposes. A normal mining claim is to actually, you know, put the claim in and do your work and produce minerals in a commercial fashion. So you're really not allowed to, for instance, bring tourists onto your mining claim and do a recreational operation. So the recreational mining areas were designed to allow that kind of activity to happen, and they're typically closed to mineral entry so that you cannot stake normal mining claims on a recreational mining area.
Mr. Fogles, is there a limitation on the size of the equipment and one that one can use in a recreational mining claim?
I don't believe there is. I think it's up to the legislature to decide how big of an area that they want to create.
Representative Kawasaki, it's my understanding, when talking with Ms. Stevens, that her intent was to be able to have these mining areas and open up some land so people could come and recreate. So people like Representative Kawasaki could go have a small mining area there where he could try and find gold or minerals that are available there and try and diversify our economy that way and allow some more recreational opportunities to happen for people who normally wouldn't.
Not to mention subsidize his legislative salary. Representative Kawasaki.
Thanks. I guess my question is, because I haven't heard of the term recreational mining claim, and so it could be sublet to other people. I mean, is it recreational as in this is just for fun, I'm going to go out and wear a hard hat and mine, or is it just a mining claim that you've decided to use part of it so that, I'm just not clear what the purpose of the recreational mining claim is.
And Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, again, the purpose of the recreational mining, it's not a recreational mining claim, it's a recreational mining area, and again, it's just a legislative area that the legislature creates pretty much sets the rules for, but typically they require some kind of management plan to be in place, and then DNR has the ability to go out to bid for a concession for someone to operate a recreational mining area. I don't know if you've ever been to the Crow Creek Mine down in Girdwood, but that's not a state recreational mining area, but it's the same kind of operation. It's a business. It's a tourist-oriented business where a business might pull in visitors and give them a gold pan and charge them $10, maybe go down to the creek and pan for some gold.
Okay, so Mr. Chairman, so otherwise it's not a commercial operation. And then I guess secondly, can you tell me the differences in what would be required for a recreational mining area versus a traditional mining claim?
Okay. So Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, on a traditional mining claim, you have to follow the state's mining laws where you stake your claim, you have to pay annual rental, you have to do work on the claim and show that you're progressing the claim, and then at some point if you do enough work and you have an economic discovery, then you start producing, you start building a mine, and you get all the permits and you go through the permitting process through the state and theoretically, you know, if we decide to issue you those permits, you get the permits and you build a mining operation that produces minerals, hires people. It's a commercial mining operation. In a recreational mining area, again, it's just the intent is to give Alaskans and other visitors a place to go gold panning on their own, either on their own or maybe have a business sublet out there to rent out gold pans by the day. But the intent is for them to go out and maybe get a few flakes of gold in a pan and just have fun mining rather than a commercial build-a-mine kind of a venture where you have to pay royalties and taxes and all that.
Commissioner Nepotensky.
Thank you. In the letter that we have, this is a letter of April 9, 2010 to Senator Huggins. On that second page, last paragraph, it's talking about staking of, it would be open to staking, and that there's no assurance that that she would actually be able to stake prior to other people. I'm trying to figure out whether the bill, as we have it, enacts what this letter does, or gets around that by just ensuring that the prior claims continue on through state ownership and leaves the rest of the area open for the recreational mining area.
Right. Representative Seaton, through the chair. This bill would, again, would remove that one portion, just one portion of the recreational mining area from the whole recreational mining area. And in that area, it is a very complicated land situation, which is in part why we have this problem to begin with, because the land actually hasn't been conveyed to the state yet. It's state-selected land. It's still owned by the BLM. And so the statutes that enact the legislative or the recreational mining area, it's only valid on state land, and it hovers above state-selected land. So when that land, and it will take effect as soon as that land gets conveyed to the state. So it gets a little complicated, and Director Milius's letter pointed out that if you remove the recreational mining area, then there's no guarantee that Michelle Stevens would be the first one to stake the claim. In subsequent looking and picking apart of this complex situation, we think it may be a little more complicated than that, and it's not quite as clear cut. So we're trying to kind of chase that piece down. But again, yeah, the bottom line is that there's still no guarantee out there that Ms. Stevens will be able to restake these claims if this bill goes through.
Representative.
So, thank you. I guess the letter states that there's two areas, a northern area, 300 acres, 200 acres in the southern area. The northern area hasn't been used much because of access problems. So the presumption is that the southern 2 acres has better access and would provide the activity. So is this bill vacating the entire southern area, although this says she only has a five-acre claim, but it's vacating the entire southern area, is that correct?
Correct, Representative Seaton. It's vacating the entire southern area, the 220 acres. The northern area has a lot of potential. What we would be doing next at some point, we would be doing a management plan for that area, which we haven't done yet, and start to figure out a way to provide for a concessionaire to maybe do some recreational mining in that area and try and focus recreational activity on the northern area rather than the southern area.
Follow up. Well, I guess I'm just trying to figure out if what we're trying to address is a problem that has come about because there's just 5 acres that is staked, wouldn't we get to the same thing without removing the whole 200 acres and just remove that 5 acres from the designation in the area, and so that we would have the southern 200 acres, which sounds like we would have more access, but remove from the southern area definition that 5 acre parcel that was previously staked. I mean, that she previously had the mining claim, federal mining claim.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I believe her mining claims that are at issue here are more than just 5 acres. To be real clear on the acreage, I believe I have online our Deputy Director of Mining, Land, and Water, Wynn Menefee, and Kerwin Krauss, our mining property manager. And perhaps if the committee agrees, I would let them chime in on some of the acreage numbers here.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Menefee or Mr. Krauss, do you have any comments?
Representative, through the chair, I'm Wynn Menefee, Chief Operations for Division of Mining, Land, and Water. And the answer is that the original claims that Michelle Stevens had encompassed the entire southern recreational mining area. Those claims no longer exist there, and so therefore there are no claims currently. The five-acre portion that gets referred to, there's a five-acre piece that Michelle Stevens is working out with the federal government to bring under lease in order for us to get conveyance of that land, because there's trespass structures there that have to be brought into compliance before the state receives the land. But aside from that, currently there are no claims that sit over top of this area, and therefore there isn't a reference to, well, there is no five-acre claim, and there and all the claims have disappeared.
Representative Gardner.
Well, I have to confess I'm a little bit confused here, but the reason there are no claims is because she gave up those claims in the understanding that once the state had title, she would be made whole. Is that correct?
Representative Gardner, through the chair, yes, that is correct.
To the chair, then it's not quite right to say there are no, those claims don't exist, because she has a standing agreement that never was met. Is that accurate?
That is correct. But the claims have been released.
Right.
Representative, she has a claim.
Representative Gardner, through the chair, yeah, she voluntarily relinquished those claims, and by law they extinguish and were no longer there.
The chair.
Representative Gardner.
My interest is in when she voluntarily relinquished those claims, there was an agreement that the state also agreed to, that when the state had title, her claims would be reinstated or something like that. So there's a moral claim, even if it, yeah, and a legal claim, I would think.
I'd be upset too.
That's exactly what this bill does. It fixes that. The problem with the state, Mr. Chair, if I mean, that's what this bill does. The intent is to fix that promise that the state made to her. The state made a promise to make her whole after that land was conveyed back over, because the state wanted that. It was good, valuable land. She agreed to do this. She didn't have to. And they're just, in the complications of conveying that back to her, there was about four lines that need to get changed in statute, and that's what this does, is to make it so that the department can go back and convey that land back to her, those claims. It fixes that promise that was made by the state to her.
More questions?
Yes, thank you. I guess I'm interested in what kind of documentation there was about that promise, because this has great value, I mean, maybe to the state, but certainly to her. And what we have is references to a promise made. But if she were to, you know, try to file suit or something, she would need some original documents, and I expect that somewhere there's something signed by state.
Maybe we should have her put in her testimony.
I've seen documentations that would fill this room. I mean, there's just so much that we wanted to get, I guess. I don't know.
Okay. Representative Kawasaki?
Filed everything.
This is a question for the chair. Is the Department of Law available?
No. Any other questions for Representative Newman or Mr. Fogles? And Michelle Stevens, is she online? Ms. Stevens, would you go ahead with your testimony?
Yes, I will. Hello. My name is Michelle Stevens, and I am a lifelong Alaskan. My statement is in reference to House Bill 340. In 1995, I gifted approximately 500 acres of area encompassed by state-selected mining claims I had acquired, which were located as a result of previous federal mining claims being declared null and void, also known as the Peters Creek-Jacobson mining property. I agreed to gift portions of my state-selected mining claims situated within the U.S. Mineral Survey 2384 to the state of Alaska with the express commitment by the state that once the federal land was conveyed or TA'd to the state of Alaska, approximately 220 acres of the area known as the Southern Petersville Recreational Mining Area, would be leased to me for the establishment of a commercial recreational mining concession that would include a museum and other amenities to be provided by myself. I own several historic buildings, a Marion shovel that helped build the Panama Canal and the Alaska Railroad, then was used for mining at Petersville in the 1940s. The other structures that are on the federal mining claims located within, I also have other structures that are on the federal mining claims located within the 220 acres. I believe that Representative Newman has maps there and he can share them with you. The agreement I had with the state to transfer or gift my state-selected mineral rights to the state was necessary because there was no other legal mechanism for me to have a recreational mining business on state land. To ensure that the area could be managed in accordance with the agreement with me and to ensure that other parties could not stake mining claims in the area, a mineral closing order 674 was issued on June 2, 1994. Then on May 8, 1997, House Bill 46 was signed into law establishing two portions of recreational mining areas. The North Petersville Recreational Mining Area is currently active, and the South Petersville Recreational Mining Area totaling a possible, and also the South Recreational Mining Area, which is not active, but the two parcels total approximately 500 acres. It was the intent of the Department of Natural Resources that the approximately 220 acres in the Southern Recreational would be leased to me when the state received conveyance or TA of the land from the Bureau of Land Management. Subsequent to the claims being gifted to the state and its issuance of the mineral closing order, the Department of Natural Resources determined that it could not, under existing state law, establish a non-competitive commercial lease to fulfill the agreement with me. However, in 2006, DNR determined a legal way whereby a commercial business could be operated on a portion of a state mining claim or claims by establishing a miscellaneous land use lease, provided there was concurrence with the state mining claim holder. This approach could not, however, be followed for lands designated by statute as a recreational mining area. This current legislative amendment contains two provisions. It would reinstate my full mineral rights to those portions of my mining claims, ADLs 508020 through 508026, that encompass the southern recreational area, which you can see on the map. It would remove the statutory designation and allow DNR to fulfill its original agreement with me. I believe that the state of Alaska, DNR, and Alaska Miners Association all concur that this is the best mechanism to proceed forward. I also would like to address the mining claims when they said that they might not go back to me. The procedure of that is that if you have mining claims that are on the outside of a federal area, that is what they call an at-risk claim, so that it automatically goes back to the person who has the area on the outside of that portion. I believe that probably Kerwin Krause can explain that to you. And I would also like to say that if you look at the map, I have portions outside the proposed rec area that are active mining claims, so that gives me at-risk claims.
Any questions from the committee for Ms. Stevens? Representative Kawasaki, then Gardner.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for being online today. You mentioned earlier in your testimony about the expressed commitment. Do you have that in writing, and is that available to the committee?
I have some documents that were written by Jules Tileson that expressed that he was working with the public and with myself and the Yetna Mining District to have this rec area be presented. I don't have the documents here with me, but there's a whole folder of documents that you can see that the state has. And Jules Tileson has been working with everybody to let them know that what the intent was. He has verbally talked to everybody to show the intent of this rec area.
Mr. Chairman,
just committee members should realize we do have that letter dated January 26, signed by Mr. Tileson and also Marty Rutherford. Both were DNR officials involved in the transaction, I guess you'd call it. Representative Kawasaki?
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that that you understood online that they haven't met directly with any member, as far as I know, members of this, of the Resources Committee that's looking at the bill right now. And the letter that I've got, I don't actually know what the background is, but it's dated January 26th of 2012. And I wondered if you had any information from 94 when you mentioned that there was an expressed commitment at that time.
Well, yes, from Jules Tileson, there was some things that were written down, but, you know, it was kind of like back then, it was a handshake, and we didn't feel that there would needed to be any thing in written document saying that this was going to go this way to Michelle Stevens and all this other. It was just discussed, you know, behind the doors with the DNR, with the director, and with the commissioner, and we all agreed that this would be a good situation for everybody because the state would get revenue, the people would have a place to go, and I could have a concession with the museum, and everybody would have a place to recreate. It was supposed to be a win-win situation for everyone.
Representative Carter?
Thank you. I find your testimony actually very impressive, and I wonder if you could give us a copy of it because there were a lot of pieces and I couldn't absorb them all at the same time. So would that be possible?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
How can I get that to you?
Ma'am, you can email it to my office. And if you need that address, we can... we can pass that on, or you can fax number.
Yes, I don't see who was speaking there at the time, but yes,
sorry,
I can email it.
Representative Feige. 371. Or fax it to 465-3799.
Mr. Chair, if I might.
Yes, Representative Carter.
I was also kind of looking along the same way that Representative Kawasaki was about some kind of documentation, and you explained how things were back then, but it still makes me sort of uncomfortable. Did you get any other kind of compensation when you signed your quit claim or whatever it was at the time?
You mean like money or something? No,
yeah.
There was nothing.
Or trade or something else.
The agreement was for the state of Alaska and I to, for me to have a concession and that the public could come and then also the state would also get revenue from this concession. So it was supposed to be a win-win situation for the state, myself, and the public. Because my buildings are historic, there's a lot of equipment there that have history behind it, and there's a need and a desire at the time for the public to come and have a place to recreate, because at the time, you could not have any recreational mining on a mining property or a mining claim or a lease, and that it was illegal to do so. And we were just trying to make a way to let the public have a place to go.
Thank you. Through the chair. Thank you, Mrs. Stevens. I understand that interest. In fact, reading through the letter and the description, I'm thinking, oh, I'd like to go there and see that myself. So I understand the interest for that, but I just think that in the absence of documentation from the time, I just want to make sure on the record that there wasn't some other compensation, because if not, I would say you were very generous to willingly give up your claims to 500 acres for mining.
Well, thank you. I think the documentation is quite clear that Jules Tileson was the director at the time and Marty Rutherford was the commissioner, and those are the people who I actually was working with at the time to have the House bill passed. I also wrote letters to Lyda Green and Rick Halford to have the House bill passed and have them support it. So I feel that, you know, the biggest documentation is what you have in front of you now, which is from Marty Rutherford and Jules Tileson, that state that, yes, they had, this was the intent.
Representative?
Mr. Chair, I just want to state on record that I have spoke to Mr. Tileson and others about what the intent is here, and I understand that there seems to be a question as to what the intent. And I have read all the documentation that she's presented, and I'm willing to sit here in front of the committee and state that. We've got the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources, who's currently the Deputy Commissioner, here to testify in front of the committee that that was the intent. We got letters from the people who were the Director of Land, Mining, and Water at the time that that was the intent, and along with the Deputy Commissioner at the time, or the Commissioner at the time, you know, we tried not to get a ton of paperwork here, but there was a lot of documentation here, and we do have some pretty reputable people here, I think, that are saying that this was the intent of the state, that in the, this bill simply, again, just tries to make her whole, and just by fixing some language, a little bit of language that allows the department to go back and fix the situation. I don't know why it's so complicated.
Representative Kowsak.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Representative Newman. I guess the reason why it's complicated for me is because it's a very specific area, and I wasn't around during the time when House Bill 46 passed, and I'm trying to understand the issue. I'm also trying to understand the reason why I've asked if Department of Law is online, is if there's any potential exposure by creating this in general law to allow a non-competitive commercial lease under the terms of this bill. And so I don't know if anybody in the room can answer that question, but, I mean, it's a concern every time we do special legislation for just special areas that we might be that's the problem with any types of these special issues. And again, I wasn't around in 94. I wasn't party to any of the discussions that were made at the time. I tend to approve of handshake agreements, but I mean, I wasn't there.
Mr. Krause, if you're online, can you speak to that?
Representative Kawasaki, to the chair. I'm Kerwin Krause, mineral property manager for Department of Natural Resources, mining section. There are some memos available from Jules Tileson, and I think probably Michelle Stevens provided that to the committee, or she will provide it. Other than that, there is no letters that I'm aware of that the commissioner or the director issued on this matter. And to my knowledge, there's probably a few emails in the file, but that and the memo are the only documents I'm aware of.
Thank you.
Would you Representative Seaton.
Yeah, could you provide us, the committee, with that? I don't believe that Ms. Stevens had that at her disposal, and so if you would provide that so we can have it in the record, that would be appreciated.
Yes, we will.
Okay.
Representative Garner, question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to belabor the point too much, but when I sat down with staff before coming to this meeting and he said this is what the bill does, but there's not much documentation. And the sponsor said I've read all the documentation she's presented, which is fine, but what we have is a loan letter written 16 years after the fact and one written 18 years after the fact. And I just feel like it's, you know, important for us to in due diligence to kind of see what we can find that was agreement at the time. And I, you know, I have a great respect for Mr. Tileson and for Mrs. Rutherford, but still, if there's real documentation, email exchanges or memos or whatever, something that maybe the sponsor said, reading all the documentation she's presented. I think it's important for us to look at that, too.
May I say something, please?
Ms. Stevens, please go ahead.
Yes, I have some letters to Lida Green and Rick Halford stating that I wanted to have this House Bill passed, that I was if they would in support for House Bill 46, and that it would benefit me and able to have a concession there. And I can get those letters to you if you'd like.
Yes, ma'am. If you could fax those to this, what was that 3799? 465-3799.
And I'll send whatever else, what other letters I have, but I guess if you can think about it logically, that I probably wouldn't gift all this, my mineral rights to back to the state if there wasn't a concession that I felt that they were going to keep their word on. If you understand what I mean, I wouldn't have done this, gifting this, if I wasn't going to, if the state hadn't have said that they would let me have a concession in return. Back in, 15, 17 years ago, this was the only way that a person could have a concession on mining properties.
Any other questions for any of the participants? Representative Seaton?
I have one for Ed Fogle, too. I'm trying to understand that we've got the letter from Marty Rutherford and Mr. Tileson, but the one from the Division of Mining, Land, and Water, Dick Milius, director, that third paragraph says, in addition, there is no assurance that Ms. Michelle Stevens would be the first to stake the claim in favor, and the law is in favor of whoever stakes claim first after the land becomes open. It is likely that a number of claimants would end up with conflicting claims. It is likely that Fish and Game may have concerned over large-scale mining on active portions of the creek. So what I want to do is find out whether the current bill gets past those problems, because one thing that we wouldn't want to do is approach this in a way that gets a whole bunch of conflicting mining claims and is somebody's looking at years of litigation. So, I mean, you've worked on this from the department's viewpoint. Will this piece of legislation reinstate those mineral claims or work in a way that we will not end up with a whole bunch of conflicting mining claims?
Representative Seaton, through the chair. This bill, as it's currently written, only gets you part of the way there, and then what it does is it removes the legislatively designated area, and that would vanish. Then the Department of Natural Resources would have to lift the mineral closing order. So there's two steps that would have to happen before that land is now available to be staked. Okay. Actually, the third thing that complicates the matter is that land is not state land yet. It's state selected. So then BLM has to actually convey that land to the state of Alaska. So there's three key things that have to happen before that land can be staked and that be a valid state claim. It's very complicated. We believe that there may be, Ms. Stevens mentioned the procedure of an at-risk claim where when a claimant stakes a state claim on state-selected land, it's called an at-risk claim, and it's not a real claim yet. And it will never be a real claim unless the federal government actually conveys that land to the state. If the federal government never conveys that land to the state, then it'll never be a valid claim. So that's why it's called an at-risk claim. So Ms. Stevens has at-risk claims on top of federal land state selected that has a legislatively designated area on top of it and a state mineral closing order on it. So it's very complicated. We think that if there's a pathway, and we're trying to get a little more clarity on this from the Department of Law, but if Michelle Stevens has indeed valid at-risk claims stake, then once all this stuff unravels and then the state finally gets the land, then Michelle Stevens is likely to have her claims whole. But at this point, from our perspective, I cannot tell you 100% that that's what exactly will happen.
Representative.
And since we are writing the statute here, is there any other way than this three-tiered section that we can, in this, in the law that we're writing, recognize the holdover claims from the federal government so that we don't get in this open staking war or time period?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I mean, we have discussed that. There are a number of other things that the legislature could do in this legislation. You could, for example, you could actually lift the mineral closing order so we didn't have to do that later on down the road. That's one thing. Whether you could actually reinstate those claims in this bill, I'm not sure I could really answer that question. I don't know the answer to that. We've never really gone there. Our presumption has always been that the legislation would just make the southern portion of the legislatively designated area vanish. But I'm not the right person to ask whether the legislature can reinstate mining claims.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I don't want to hold up this process because it is somewhat of a process, but it seems to be a process that is going, has a potential for further entanglements. So it seems like if we are reinstating to get to a position of honoring the agreement that we had previously, that we should do that in the most expeditious way that does not open these claims to conflict. And so I'm going to request the sponsor and DNR to work with law and find out whether this piece of law can actively do that, and so we do not get into the position of having, you know, an Alaskan citizen that has been acting in good faith all this time and put them in years of litigation which could ensue if we do this in this complicated stepwise fashion. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm not wanting to hold up the process, but what I'm saying is that I think that with the Department of Law should be able to get us to honor our commitments in a much clearer way than going through an open staking process and then relying on at-risk claims on adjoining property to give you priority. So, Mr. Chairman, that's my request to the sponsor to work with the department and the department to try to figure that out.
Hello, Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, thank you. For Representative Seaton, that has been our intent. But there are several steps, as Deputy Commissioner Fogels has said, that have to happen first. This is the first in working our way through this process. And we tried to keep it as simple as we could because we don't know what the future is going to go. I mean, that has to be negotiated out, but there are certain steps that have to happen first, so that she is made whole again. And there was no reason for her why she had to do this in the first place, except to try and help the state of Alaska, because the state of Alaska wanted those lands conveyed to them, but they're still federal lands. So she acted in good faith on this. We're trying to make her whole, but we're trying to do it as simple as possible. I mean, she's already spent a ton of money on this, on attorney fees and everything else. We're trying to negotiate this through the best we can. The administration, through Department of Law, DNR, through myself as a legislator, through Senator Huggins, through Ms. Stevens, have all tried to work through this to make her whole. And that's what we're trying to do. I mean, I don't know how much more I can explain that, but that is a process. We're trying to work through that thing, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Brief it is. House Resources Committee back into order.
Babies in it.
Fellas? Yeah, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, again, I wanted to state that what we're trying to do here and what we're discussing in the committee process is a way to accomplish in the most expedited way with not putting further legal entanglements ahead of Ms. Stevens. And I'm hearing from DNR that there may be some other things that can be added by the legislature that they can't do by the department, but the legislature can do. And they're going to look at this from the Department of Law, and in the next committee, they will, or between now and then, if there are amendments that can go in that will accomplish that without putting her claims at risk of cross claims and other things. And Mr. Fogles has agreed that he would do that from the department. Is that correct, Mr. Fogles?
That is correct, Representative. Okay.
That I'm fine moving this bill today and getting the process on the way, but I think that there could be a clearer, better way for this to be resolved in Ms. Stevens' favor. So thank you for that, Mr. Chairman. I think there's some other discussion.
Did you move the bill or?
I did not. Further discussion. Representative Kawasaki?
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's, you know, I mean, clearly that's why we've asked Department of Law if they were going to be online. I think there's legal issues that we have not discussed dealing with this bill. And just seeing it, I feel pretty uncomfortable moving a bill without with recommendations. I think that there is no next committee of referral. So the next time we see this bill is potentially on the House floor.
Representative Carter, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was one of the issues I was going to raise because it doesn't have another committee, and I think it's just not quite ready. In principle, I absolutely agree with it. Somebody gives something up with an agreement, we need to make her whole. That's the right thing to do. But it's also the right thing for us to ensure that we do it properly with due diligence, and I feel like, you know, we have a letter written this year, 18 years later. I feel like I need to see some other kind of documentation and something that the sponsor referred to. And that's appropriate for us to do. I mean, I want to be certain that we're doing it right so that, as Representative Seaton says, down the road it doesn't come back and bite us.
Any other questions from the committee? To Mr. Fogles and Representative Newman, I think you kind of understand where we're coming from. I would ask, this, the next stop for this bill will be at the Rules Committee. And what we really need, certainly this is one way forward, and perhaps there are other methods that the Department of Law can recommend for essentially righting the wrong hand that has been dealt to Ms. Stevens. And I would ask if we do pass it out of committee here and send it on to the Rules Committee that you would provide the Rules Chairman with an opinion from the Department of Law as to the other options perhaps available to both the state and or Ms. Stevens. Certainly this may be the way forward. This may be one of several ways forward. It's unfortunate we did not have someone from Department of Law here on short notice, but that is certainly something I think in the spirit of trying to right this wrong, I would like to see this moved out of committee, but the Rules Chairman is certainly capable of looking at the Department of Law and making a decision on his end. So, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move House Bill 340, Version A, from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Object.
Any objections been registered for discussion or?
I think it's a good idea. I support it in principle, but I think it's half-baked and not ready for prime time and will be in a fiasco down the road.
Any other discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
I'd just like to note that is a zero fiscal note that we're accompanying.
Thank you. Any other? Representative Dick.
Yes, I just like, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to hear from the bill sponsor. If we were to let this out of committee today, do we have assurance that the right, we're not going to do the wrong thing twice, that we're going to do the right thing for this woman? I need assurance from you that if we let it out of committee, that she's going to be okay.
Through the chair, Representative Dick, there's been many, many hours of discussion to get to this point, to try and make sure that we're doing the right thing for this lady from the department, myself, the members of PASS, and we'll continue to do that.
Do you hold your objection, Representative Carter?
I do.
Okay. Please call the roll.
May I say one thing? Hello?
Okay. Hold that for a second. Ms. Stevens, in summation, please go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, Ms. Stevens, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I think that if you reinstated the prior act of mineral rights that existed prior to the LDA, that would probably clear the problem up.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Stevens. Okay, the bill has been moved. Please call the roll.
Reporting House Bill 340. Representative Dick?
Yes.
Representative Gardner?
No.
Representative Kawasaki?
No.
Representative Wilson is absent. Representative Heron is absent. Representative Munoz?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
Co-Chair Feige?
Yes.
Co-Chair Seaton?
Yes.
5 yay, 2 nay.
Okay, thank you. House Bill 340, version A, has been moved out of committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Okay, we'll bring the committee back to order. Next on the agenda, going to review a couple more folks that are up for positions. The first one is Mr. Don Korberg from Delta Junction. He's been nominated to fill a seat on the Big Game Commercial Services Board. Mr. Korberg, are you there?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. This is Don Korberg.
Yeah, good afternoon, Don. Representative Feige here. If you would tell us why you want to be on the Big Game Commercial Services Board.
Well, to be perfectly honest, 2 years ago, I didn't. I've been in Delta Junction since 1978 and served on the Fish and Game Advisory Committee longer than most people can remember. I've been the chairman for the last 4 years. And I also worked with the Department of Fish and Game on the Bison Range. In fact, I was in the room when they wrote the bill to establish it back in 1979. And about 2 years ago, DNR started this guide concession program review, and our advisory committee had the opportunity to comment on that. And we do have a couple of assistant guides that serve on the Delta Fish and Game Advisory Committee, and I asked them if they would be willing to meet with some of the local guides and sort of walk through that and see, make any corrections or additions or whatever needed to be done to improve it. They did, and not knowing basically too much about the guiding industry, I've never been a guide, I've never worked for the guides, I've never had the ambition to be a guide. I don't want to take something I enjoy and make work out of it, such as hunting. But I thought it might behoove me to satisfy some of my own interests to attend that work session. And so we spent 2 days and then several nights or short periods of time addressing that entire complex guide concession proposal. As a result of that, I did learn a considerable amount about the guiding industry I didn't know. I carried a lot of the same opinions that a lot of people had just based on rumor, but I'm finding that those were mostly myths. And so as a result of that, I decided to travel down to Anchorage to attend the Alaska Professional Hunters Association meeting in December. And that's kind of an organization of professional guides. And I was favorably impressed with what I learned down there, their code of ethics and their ultimate challenge is to try to improve the service and the quality to the guiding industry and make it the best that it can possibly be. Following that, I was asked to attend the Big Game Commercial Services Board meeting in Fairbanks, and I met with a few of the guides and also members of DNR, and we discussed more of that guide's concessionary. So I kind of slid in the back door and got involved with that just out of my own interest, and then I pretty much left it as is. Then I got a call from a couple of guides, actually members of the Big Game Commercial Services Board, because I had displayed a little interest on my own, being just a representative of the general public, if I would be interested in serving on the board as a public representative. They had an opening. And so I asked them, I said, the only reason or way I would be interested in serving on the board is if they felt I had some talent that I might convey that would improve the committee. You know, I'm not going to go in there just to keep a seat warm. And as a result, they encouraged me to apply, so I did send my resume to the governor's office, and then I received an appointment. And I've actually, if the committee is so concerned, I mean, and would like to another neutral position, I guess you might call it neutral position, I attended or participated in two audio conferences in the last Big Game Commercial Services Board, so I have a short track record, and I'm sure you could contact any members, existing members of the Big Game Commercial Services Board or the Division of Occupational Licensing to get a little report on whether I contributed positively or what, you know, just their opinion. And so that's where I am. I'm, if I can help, I'm here to help, and I certainly don't want to hinder anything. I do not want to just intend to lay down and let the guide industry do what they want to do. I've had my experience with some of the unfortunate guys, not unfortunate, they were deliberate in what they did. But I would like to find a way to improve the situation and yet protect the interest of the public, which is me.
Well, thank you, Mr. Korberg. Questions from the committee? Representative Gardner.
Thank you. This is just sort of a little bit of a sideline interest, but I understand you've served with the Delta Bison Working Group, and we have at least one member of this committee with a particular interest in that. Can you just tell us a little bit about the work that you and the group have been doing?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Gardner, we started in 79. They developed the range in 84, and as a member of the public working, and that Delta Bison Working Group is somewhat of an advisory capacity to the Department of Fish and Game on how to manage the bison range. And we've basically been trying to manipulate the bison herd in such a way that still meets the intent of the law to postpone their migration over into the private land. And we have done a multitude of things out there, but you know, they're migratory by nature, and I think they just walk to have something to do. So they can have food, shelter, water right in front of them. They'll walk off and leave it. And so, I mean, it's been a real struggle. If you want controversy, that has been, there's been a lot of that.
Thank you.
I've been in contact with Representative Dick about some of that in the past, and it's quite an obstacle.
Thank you.
Mr. Korberg, Representative Feige here. Regarding the guide concession program that DNR is working on, what do you see as some of the challenges with implementing that program or even getting that program through to the public?
Well, I think one of the major hurdles in that whole program is trying to draw lines on the map where these guide concession areas would be that would have sufficient resource to enable guides to operate in there and make a living. There's a tendency to want to be all things to all people, and I'm afraid that just can't happen. We've got so much competition now because they can just basically move around and kind of shoot out and run out. And what we're trying to do here is establish, based on an evaluative process, select the best guides for the areas they want to be in. And the downside to that might be when we start talking about guide concession areas is I hope it doesn't get to where the Department of Fish and Game has to do a population estimate in every one to determine what the harvestable surplus is. That would be essentially shooting ourselves in the foot. But the process to me is when I first came here in the late 70s, came in the mid-70s actually, and there were exclusive guide areas. And the guiding industry seemed to work pretty well. They were kind of their own managers. They knew that if they over-harvested, they'd be out of business. And then, Owashek or something like that challenged it and found that it was unconstitutional, and then it became almost a heyday. Apparently, they lowered the standards on the guide exams, which the Board of Commercial Services Board actually does develop. And all of a sudden we skyrocketed up to 1,800 guides. So it's been a bit of a nightmare. And when you got that much competition, you're always going to have problems.
One final question, Mr. Korberg. In implementing that program, what do you believe is paramount? The status of the game populations or the economic health of the guides?
I don't think you can have one without the other. I mean, if I were God for a day, I probably would review these guides and I'd appoint the better guides that we have into the industry and those that had a bit of a track record, had done things that were, unethical, they wouldn't be there. But unfortunately, maybe fortunately, that's not the case. But I don't think you can separate one from the other. We need to have the guide industry provides a service. If you look, some of us resident hunters try to do as much as we can to limit the non-residents. But if we step back for a minute and look, this Alaska is 60% federal land, which means they own just as much of it as I do. If we look at the revenue that they generate, I looked at the stats from 2010, and non-resident hunters represented like between 12 and 13% of the hunters, yet they contributed over 70% of the funding to the Department of Fish and Game through licenses and tags. So if we as residents really try to eliminate the non-resident, then we're going to have to step up to the plate financially if we want to have the same level of game management that we do now.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Korber.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak to Mr. Korberg's qualifications? Okay, next on to Mr. Mike Meekins from Palmer. He's an appointee as well to the Big Game Commercial Services Board. Mr. Meekins, are you there?
Yes, Mike Meekin here. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can. If you would, tell us why you'd like to be on the Big Game Commercial Services Board.
Okay, well, actually, I was born and raised in Alaska. I've actually been a guide since I was about 16 years old, an assistant guide, and been actively involved in the industry ever since. I mean, I'm still actively involved and stuff like that, and I think I just might have an opinion or two on some of the stuff that's coming up, and I'd like to kind of give back to what has been good to me for quite a few years since I'm 59 now. So, and I think that's probably the main reason.
Any other questions for Mr. Meekins? No? Mm-hmm. And Mr. Meekins, where have you hunted, or where have you guided, rather, in the state?
Basically, I'm licensed to operate out of, and I do also have a transporter's license, and I also run Meekins Air Service, Air Taxi Service, which is out of the Sheep Mountain area, which generally deals mainly with Unit 13, but we operate in 14 and 16, so South Central Alaska, basically.
Do you, as far as the guide concessionary program that is being proposed, what are your thoughts on that, and what do you believe are some of the biggest challenges that we in the state will face on that program?
Well, I mean, I've heard a little bit about it, but I have not heard the whole program of how they're going to initiate it or whatever. But being actively involved in guiding before when there was exclusive guiding areas, and then they kind of did away with those, and then they brought them back in. The big problem that I see, or that I think it could be a problem, would be that it seems like in this guiding industry, like when they have federal concessions, the people that have the most amount of money get them. I'd like to kind of see a little people, maybe a guide that maybe doesn't have a lot of clients, but he just kind of makes a living off it. Maybe he lives out in remote Alaska, stuff like that, that it ensures a place for those people, because it's a lot of those people that have been, you know, steadily, actively involved in the business and through the years and stuff like that. So I'd like to preserve that lifestyle for those individuals that wouldn't be big enough maybe to bid on or to, you know, to get the concessions for the state on that land, if that is the way it's going to be developed. But I don't know exactly how it's going to be developed because I haven't seen it for sure. So. Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir, it did.
Okay.
Any further questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Meekins.
Okay, thank you for your time.
At this point, we'll take a brief at ease. Okay, we're back on the record, and Ms. A will be passing around the paperwork to sign for folks on the Big Game Commercial Services Board. Are there any, I don't believe we have anybody else on the line to testify?
Okay.
Is there anybody else in the room that would like to testify on the Fisherman's Fund Advisory Council? Okay. Okay, we'll close testimony on the Fisherman's Fund Advisory Council, and Ms. Hay will pass that paperwork around as well. Representative Seat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do we need a motion to send the names to the joint session for consideration for Big Game Commercial Services Board? I'd be willing to make that motion now.
For the Big Game Commercial Services Board and for the Fisherman's Fund, yes, if you would make that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move that the Resources Committee has considered the resumes and testimony of people for Big Game Commercial Services Board and for the Fisherman's Fund Advisory Council, and that we send those on for consideration by joint session, and further just clarifying for the individuals that signing the paperwork does not signify either support or opposition to any of those candidates, but simply that we have considered their qualifications, and we're sending their names along to confirmation hearings.
And hearing no objection, we will forward the names for the Big Game Commercial Services Board and the Fisherman's Fund Advisory Council. We have at least one person in the audience that I believe would like to testify on our Board of Game nominee, Tina Brown.
Good afternoon.
members of the House Resources Committee, and thank you for taking my testimony. You have my written testimony, but there's a bottom line that I'd like to stress about this person. Alaskans trust you, our elected officials, our representatives, which means a lot to me, to put responsible and honorable people in positions of power, such as on the Board of Game. The public needs and wants people who respect our laws and who can be trusted to make the best decisions for us all. Lynn Keough's records show me that he is not such a person, and I strongly urge you to vote against his confirmation. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for your service to our state.
Okay, any questions for Ms. Brown? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify regarding our appointment of Lynn Keough to the Board of Game? Okay, at this time we'll close public testimony. And Representative Seaton, I'll entertain a motion.
Representative Feige.
There's some discussion.
Discussion. Representative Dick.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to make a comment because I've lived in the Western Alaska for 45 years, and I really take seriously all the emails and letters we get. I think that we have to really pay attention to them. But as I looked through every one of them, I saw that there was only one here from Anchor Point that was from anybody that actually lives in an area that's impacted by the issue about which everybody has a problem with Keyhole. And the issue, of course, is predator control. And that's an issue that's been an emotional issue in the past. It's divided the state in the past. And unfortunately, it continues to divide the state. And my only thought is that with all of the negative comments I've gotten and emails, and I read them all, I take them all very seriously, that every one of them have come from people who do not live in an area that's impacted by predator control. And it was, and I've mentioned before, that it was very frustrating for me in the past that the people who are making the decisions who are about the conditions under which we lived were not then aware of the consequences of the decisions, and they wouldn't live with the long-term consequences of those decisions. So I can understand how ideologically people would disagree with Lynn Keough, but at the same time, he is aware of the reality that our people who live in the areas that are desperately needing predator control, the conditions that we live under. So I understand why people who really believe in predator control would oppose him, but I guess I'll draw the line and say that everybody with the example of one from Anchor Point, none of them live in the reality that are impacted by regions that desperately need predator control, even to this day. This year has been a horrible year for moose. We're probably going to lose 50% of our moose, and 50% of nothing is still, 50% of zero is still zero. So we haven't recovered from the last onslaught of trying to save the predators. So with all due respect to those that are opposed to Mr. Keough, I think we need him and people like him for at least another 10 years before we can recover from the devastation that took place in the past.
Okay, thank you, Representative Dick. At this time, I'm going to reopen public testimony. I have a fellow named Joe Letarte, whose name I inadvertently buried in this pile of paperwork up here. But he's from the Alaska Trappers Association and is calling in from the Fairbanks LIO. So, Mr. Letarte, if you would go ahead with your testimony, and I apologize.
That's fine. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. I'm the current president of the Alaska Trappers Association, and I've been asked to come here today by the board of directors of the Alaska Trappers Association and the 1,000-member membership to endorse Mr. Lynn Keough for a seat on the Board of Game. We feel that he represents the values and the knowledge and the expertise to sit on the board, and we hope at this time that you will confirm his seat on the Board of Game. And that is all I have at this time, and I thank you for your time and the opportunity to speak to you. Thank you very much.
Any questions for Mr. Letarte? Representative.
My question, sir, is of the people that that have belonged to the Alaska Trappers that you are here representing, how many of them, sir, live? How many of them live in urban areas, and how many of them live actually out in the woods where predator control is an issue?
We have a vast membership out in Bethel, Nome, up in the Brooks Range. Obviously, the majority of our membership has bases that are a little closer to urban areas, but we have many full-time professional trappers, such as Mr. Keel, that have spent their lives in the woods and depend on the resources that you're talking about for a livelihood.
Representative Kelsey.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Joe, for being online today. I have a question because after this committee hearing, it was last week, I met with folks and asked them why there aren't more candidates for the Board of Game. And I just kind of wanted to hear your opinion, being president of the Trappers Association, whether that's the truth, whether there just aren't enough qualified candidates to come forward before the governor, or and if that is, then why that might be.
I think there's quite a few qualified people, such as Lynn, and Lynn is, through his occupations, has expertise on the advisory committee in the Anchorage area, and has vast experience with the working policies of what he's going to have to deal with on the Board of Game, is about as qualified as they come.
I don't want to argue with the qualifications right now, but I mean, it just shows, Joe, that he's got 6 years on the Anchorage Fish and Game Advisory Board. We had a couple candidates earlier at this meeting. The gentleman from Delta with a master's degree in fisheries sciences, 30 years dealing with the bison herd in the Delta Greeley area. The other member for the Big Game Commercial Services Board with a master's degree in fish sciences and also big game commercial hunters and an air taxi service, for instance. So I guess, I find it hard to believe that, again, that there's not enough qualified candidates, and that's just my comment.
Any further questions, Representative Seaton?
I guess it's under discussion since we have the nominee here. And of course, Mr. Keogh testified to us the other day. And, of course, my question to him was that, you know, I had some problems with in my area that I represent. And because we have a problem of the bull-cow ratio, and when you're putting in predator control because you don't have enough bulls for the number of cows you have, not because of a low population, we are looking at things wrong when we say, I think that wolves are the reason why we don't have big, strong bulls, and yet we've got lots of cows around that, you know, don't have enough bulls to service them. So we've got some really disconnect there. And also, the problem was that when we were talking about habitat considerations and the and I asked him about that, he said that he disregarded those because those comments were put in by people that just were opposed to predator control. And I took a little offense at that because I'm one of the people that wrote my personal letter commenting to him because I, you know, own 5 acres, and including a deep gorge in which there's no willow browse left because of the habitat problem caused by the snowshoe hare explosion that we've had over the years. And when we're going in predator control on an area where we're having this severe habitat competition, which is just denuding the place. I mean, shot 100 or more rabbits from my bedroom window out in my lawn. I mean, it is just terrible. Everybody's lost all their fruit trees around the Homer bench and everything else because of this, and yet we're putting in predator control in that area. So, you know, I was quite concerned when his comment was that he disregarded that, habitat competition, which was brought up by, I know numerous people, because numerous people have brought it up to me, as well as I had made my comment to the board as well. So I'm just wanting to respond to Representative Dick that, you know, people that are living in that area that have seen what the situation is, and those comments are disregarded. To me, that doesn't seem to be the balance that I want to have on the board. So I'm not saying how I'm going to vote on the candidate, but that was the question I asked, and I was not very happy with the answer. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Is Mr. Keogh on the line?
Mr. Keogh is on the line.
Representative Dick, then Kawasaki.
Okay. And I don't want to drag this on, but I just would like to say that in the past, I attended a meeting in McGrath where everybody was expressing their concerns and desperately trying to get their concerns out. And there was somebody from the Anoka Wildlife Refuge who was sitting, he was rocking back and forth, and he was saying, browse, browse, browse. And I couldn't figure out what he was doing. And then it finally dawned on me, in his mind, it didn't matter what people were saying in the meeting, that browse, inadequate browse, was the mantra. It was, and so I'm reflecting on the story of the little boy that cried wolf. If all you ever hear is browse, 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 and then browse is the issue, you're far less likely to listen, because it's been the browse conversation has been going on for 20 years. And so we were told that the reason our moose were dying off was because there wasn't enough browse. Well, you can't get through the woods for all the browse in our country. You can't get off the river. There's so much browse. So I'm not trying to make an excuse. I'm not contradicting you. But I am saying that with the story of the little boy that cried wolf in mind, that was the mantra for 2 decades. And that's why people who really are looking for science are less apt to listen to that. And I don't excuse them for not listening, but I know that's why.
Representative Kawasaki?
Is this in... discussion, under discussion?
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know Mr. Keogh. I've never met him before. I don't know what his votes were on the board while he's been a board member. And ultimately, you know, I don't think that matters so much as to whether this body gets to decide whether he's the qualified applicant and whether he should be a member of the board. But, you know, the evidence about whether this member would be an objective thinker on the board, whether he would take the public testimony into account, some of the problems that he's got, and you know, we looked up other members have issues with speeding tickets in this body, and I have a couple. But this is a board member, this is a board member who we are going to confirm in joint session, possibly, that has a number of troubling tickets and violations for which, when asked about in this committee, he did not seem to take appropriate responsibility for his actions, did not seem accountable to those issues, had other people defend that issues dealing with 9/11, which I don't know where that came from, when he was asked about whether he has under conflicts of interest, a conflict of interest, could you or any member of your family be affected financially by decisions made by the board or commission of which you were applying? He responded no on this. When asked about why he responded no, though he is a member or he has his own guiding business, he seemed, I don't know if unconcerned is the answer, but he just seemed that it wasn't an issue. And I find that troubling at the least, that he doesn't feel that there's a potential conflict of interest when every other board member for the Board of Game who's come before here, who has an interest like a guiding license, like Mr. Korberg earlier, I think it was Korberg, or no, it was the other member from the Big Game Commercial Services Board, said that yes, they do in fact have a conflict of interest, and it's obvious, and I think it's obvious in this case too. You know, I'm not so much as to whether he supports intensive game management or any of the details. I mean, I'm not a biologist, and I don't think any of us have advanced degrees in biology. So I just want to have somebody on this board that I think will reflect the state of Alaska as a whole, be objective in their opinion and objective in their rulings, because this is a pretty hefty board with a pretty big amount of responsibility. And I would have trouble supporting the, his qualifications. Thank you.
Any other comments from the committee?
Do we have Mr. Keough online?
He's still on. He is online.
I mean, Mr. Chairman, you know, I restated because some members weren't here what my questions to him were and what his response was, but I think it's only fair if he's online and if he wishes to respond to, you know, the comments that I made and the comment, you know, his response from the previous day, I'd be happy to hear that. But
okay, Mr. Keough, would you like to respond to the questions of Representative Seaton as well as Representative Kawasaki's comments?
Yes, sir. I would like to make a couple comments. You know, I guess I did a very poor job last time explaining my position on the habitat issue when the snowshoe hare subject was brought up. But, you know, basically my understanding with the snowshoe hare is the snowshoe hares start repopulating. They come up to excess, and as they feed on their browse, the browse has a built-in safety mechanism to itself. So the snowshoe hares don't actually kill the browse. The browse itself creates a toxin which becomes bitter to the snowshoe hares. So basically, in the end of the at the end of the cycle here, it's their browse that actually kills them in the end because it becomes toxic for them. So I guess I didn't convey that when I answered the previous question. So the snowshoe hares browsing on the willow stuff, what? No, I didn't consider that a concern because they're not killing the browse. It actually protects itself so that they don't. The browse keeps itself from being over browsed. So, and maybe that's a better explanation of my position on that. I don't know. As far as the violations, and I have to be honest with you here. I haven't looked at that court record. I mean, I lived through some of my financial difficulties. I lived through them, so I don't really need to go back and read them again. But at the same time, I'm a junior. I'm a Lynn Keough junior. I'm not 100% sure that all the information you look at is all mine. The violations, I did take responsibility for them. I didn't fight them. I was in the wrong. I thought I was in the right, but I was in the wrong. So I stepped up, I paid my fines, and I moved on. I guess I didn't mean to convey the part that it didn't matter to me. Heck, it makes a big difference. I mean, my integrity is everything to me. And I don't want people to think that I intentionally do anything against the law. So anyway, those are just a couple of responses.
Hi. Representative Munoz.
Thank you, Lynn. I wasn't at the earlier meeting when you testified, so I apologize if you've already addressed the questions regarding the court record. But were any of the judgments against you based on misdemeanors or crimes greater?
No, ma'am. Through the chair, in fact, I actually had a background check done here 2 years ago because we were put in for a contract to do some bear guarding. And I had to have a background check from public safety and fish and wildlife, and it shows absolutely no violations whatsoever on my record. So, and then I guess if I could real quick on the conflict of interest, you know, at the beginning of every board meeting, we have to do an ethics disclosure. And since every meeting is different and every time we're dealing with different proposals, at that time when we give our ethics disclosure, we give our opinion whether or not there's going to be any conflict of interest on any of the proposals we're going to deal with, and then the chair deems whether or not there is a conflict, and if so, then we would abstain from those votes and that discussion on those proposals.
Good. Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't going to bring this up, but actually, since you did, I'd just like a little more information about the court cases and whether they were yours or your father, since you're a junior. So in 1995, June 17th, there was a case, Violate Comm Guide S. What was that you, and what was that? What does that actually mean?
95. And I'm guessing commercial. Well, can you give me that abbreviation again?
It's actually the reference is 11 AAC 18.030C, violate comm guide S, violation or infraction, non-criminal.
and it was assigned to Judge Christensen.
Excuse me, is there a case?
Okay, I believe that is me. It was a parking citation. It was basically the commercial guide stipulations. And the reason that is even there, and boy, I tell you what, talk about pay a price for this one. I never received the citation that they're talking about. But 2 years after the fact, my dad and I are coming home from our trap line. Trooper pulls up to see if everything's okay. Oh, yeah, everything's fine. He does a quick name check and asks, are you Lynn Keough? And I go, yes, sir, I am. And so he needs to talk. Evidently, a ticket had been issued. I had never received this citation. It said on the citation, evidently, not present. But, yeah, I still got to talk to the state trooper over the issue. And when I contested the ticket in the Kenai courts, the judge threw it out because I never received the ticket. And again, what I tried to explain on the last confirmation deal is dealing with state parks, my commercial operator permit allows me to do certain things. And things that have been allowed for years, all of a sudden they change their mind and that's no longer allowed. Or it's not, you're not allowed to park in this parking lot, but you can park in this one. To be honest with you, even being in the business as long as I have, it's very confusing because the way things keep getting perpetually changed. Where your permit authorized you to do this one time, you can launch your boat in this at this launch, they change it. No, you can't launch it at launch anymore without paying for the launch, which, again, I received a citation for that. So, I mean, it's not an excuse. I'm just saying that's just part of living with working with Department of Natural Resources on the Kenai. Or state parks, I guess, on the Kenai.
Thank you. And I think we can probably be briefer on the other ones, but there's one from 2004. It's Comfish Permit Stip, and that was in no contest.
I'm believing that was, again, it was fishing stipulations, 04. 04, I'm going to have to say that was the motor violation, I believe, but I'm not 100% sure.
Okay. And then the one in 04, July of 04, I guess it's the same time, but it was, oh, that was the outboard motor. There were two different issues on the same day. One was the outboard motor, and I don't know what the other was. Comfish permit, commercial fishing permit.
Well, you get a double whammy on that kind of stuff. You get I got the motor violation, but then it's also a guide stipulation violation, so you actually get hit twice for the same thing.
Thank you.
Any other comments from committee? I'd just like to say a couple things. You've heard a lot of, received a lot of input on Mr. Keough's nomination. And I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Keough, you've attended exactly two guide board meetings?
Well, I'm currently in the third one, right, as we speak.
Okay, so you're in the middle of the third guide or game board meeting. We receive many comments, and you know, a lot of these comments tried to point to was essentially a list of court records, and some of these court records are obviously not Mr. Keough. I don't think he was born in 1932. I assume that was his father. Several of these tickets, in fact, a very respectable number of those tickets are speeding tickets, and so he drives on the highway down there. But I don't believe, other than some fairly minor parking or boat access tickets, you have not been cited for any violation of the big game regulations, have you?
No, sir. I do not have any fishing or hunting violations. And I have a background check that I believe might be distributed to you to verify that.
Okay. And, you know, some of these the complaints against Mr. Keough seem to center mostly, in my view, over his opinion on the use of predator control and managing game populations. And quite frankly, I spent a lot of time flying over Representative Dick's backyard over the years. And during the late 90s and into the 2000s, I saw quite a bit of problems with predator populations, taking down much of the resources that the people of Alaska depend on. And in my own backyard here, over the last 10 years, we had an issue with excessive wolf numbers in the Neltina Basin. And there was a program. It was fairly hotly contested, and people were given the opportunity to go shoot wolves using airplanes. It was a land-and-shoot type operation. And over the last, I guess we're in 4 years now, each year the number of wolves taken under that program decreased. In fact, last year, talking to one of my constituents who was participating in that program, they weren't able to shoot enough wolves because to meet the quota. They never filled the quota that the Fish and Game had put out there. So consequently, the caribou numbers in the Neltina Basin, which is a Tier 2 hunting area and frequented by many Anchorage, Matsu, as well as local residents, the caribou numbers have started to increase. So it's clear that predator control has its benefits, perhaps not if you're a predator, but for the overall health of our game populations, I think it is certainly a useful tool, and I don't find other than Mr. Keough is entitled to his opinion, as are we all, but I don't find anything beyond that opinion that, in my view, would disqualify him for the Board of Game. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I want to make it clear that my comments were not directed towards Representative Dick's area, because he knows his area, and you know yours, and I know my backyard, and that was what my comments were.
I've flown in your backyard, too.
Yes. And if there's no further comments, I would move that the Resource Committee has reviewed the qualifications of Mr. Keough for the Board of Game, and that we forward his name to the joint session for consideration. And again, knowing that that people's forwarding and signing their name is not either a vote for or against the nominee.
Hearing no objection from the committee, Mr. Keough's name will be forwarded to the joint session for confirmation. And we'll take a brief at ease to sign the papers. On Monday, March 5th, we will hear House Bill 361. It's Governor's Bill, Disposals of State Resources. There will not be a committee meeting on Wednesday, March 7th, or Friday, March 9th.
Wait 30 seconds.
With that, the House Resources Committee will turn at, looks like, 2:55 p.m.